So much for cities. What about the ocean? Eleanor Sterling is at the American Museum of Natural History in New York.
I work in the Pacific Ocean studying sea turtles, the green sea turtles and the hawksbill sea turtles.
And one of them is supposed to be doing extra well recently with numbers, is that right?
Yeah, actually, we're finding that populations are increasing in some areas of the world, which is very exciting, and the same thing's actually happening with the green turtles. Some areas are harder hit, and some areas are doing better, so it's
Yeah, you're looking at the global scene as well, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah. And in the area where we're working in the Pacific, in fact, very few people knew anything about the population that we're studying. They knew that there were some turtles in this area, which is a Palmyra Atoll National Wildlife Refuge. It's owned and operated by the Nature Conservancy and the Fish and Wildlife Service in the United States, even though it's halfway between Hawaii and Fiji. It's right there in the middle of nowhere. And people had been visiting, and they knew there were turtles there, but they didn't know how many or what they did when they were there. Are they nesting? Are they feeding? And so our job was to really try to get a better sense for what the turtle populations were there and what they're doing while they're there, so that folks who are managing the area can work to help ensure that those turtles stay healthy and continue to travel around the world as they do.
Well, traveling around the world makes them difficult to count. How do you do so?
A very difficult thing to do. We have a couple of different techniques for trying to count them. One of them is traveling around in kayaks and counting all the turtle heads that we see. And so we have lots of different kayaks heading out from the same point on the atoll at the same time and then traveling at the same speed and basically counting everything they can see. And so you know that if some kayak is in the north end of the atoll and another one's at the south end, and they see turtles at exactly the same time, those are different turtles. So that way you can start to get at least a minimum population size for turtles. But the best way to do it is to capture turtles and to mark them or put a tag on the turtles. And we put little identification devices inside the turtle, just under the skin of the turtle, much like people use these days for dog identification. In case your dog gets lost, there's a little chip that you can put in just under the skin, and we do that with the turtles. And then we can do some math to determine how many turtles we catch, how many of those we re-catch, and through that process estimate the population size.
Got any numbers for me?
You know, interestingly, we've caught 90 turtles and no recatches, which is a really interesting thing. Normally, you would have caught a couple of them again, and so there are a lot. That's what we know, there are a lot.
Squillions, millions.
Oh, I don't think so. But even 90 is a wonderful population size for a group of turtles, and one of those was a hawksbill, and the other 89 were green. So we do know that the hawksbills are much less frequently found on the atoll.
As this is the International Year of Biodiversity, how do turtles connect to that great big wider picture?
You know, that's a really great question. So turtles connect in so many different ways because they do travel around the world. They connect up different countries and different areas. They might breed or nest in a particular area and then travel 10,000 miles to feed somewhere else and then turn around and come back. And so they're connecting up resources from one place to the other. They're eating in one place and then leaving resources somewhere else. And so they're helping to transport energy and nutrients around the world, and they serve as food for important populations such as sharks, endangered sharks. They're a major food resource for the tiger shark, for instance. So they're part of that whole network, that web that we call the web of life. And they also are indicative, I think, of the effect of humans on natural populations around the world. So turtle decline is in part caused by human hunting of turtles, but also bycatch. So turtles that are caught in nets that were originally meant for instance, shrimp. And many, many turtles get drowned in those nets as fish are being brought in. Invertebrates are being brought in, the turtles get caught in the net and they drown, and that causes massive declines in their populations. Because turtles, the first year of reproduction in some turtles may be in their 30s, so they live for a very long time before they start to breed. So if you lose an adult turtle in a net, that's a turtle that's had many decades of maturation and may not even have bred yet. So there are massive problems with the declines that you have from, say, turtles, adult turtles that are killed in fishing.
Reminds me somewhat of the story of the fish, the orange roughy, which they actually still sell them in shops, which is rather shocking because they come from quite deep down. And the ones you've got in the shop is probably about 70 to 100 years old. and doesn't reproduce until God knows when. I mean, it's the same sort of story, isn't it?
It's exactly the same story. And I went to an event once where a colleague said, I refuse to eat a fish that's older than my grandparents. I thought that was an excellent suggestion.
You talked about the turtles going purposefully in a particular direction. I somehow don't picture turtles doing anything other than meandering around. Now, they're reptiles, obviously. They've got lots of equipment, a bit like fish to some extent, to help them navigate. Do they navigate? Do they set out to go to a particular place?
You know, that's a great question, and people are still doing quite a bit of research to understand what mechanism turtles use in order to move across the world. But yes, they absolutely must be navigating, because they'll be born on a particular beach and head out into the ocean as little turtlets, and they basically ride the ocean currents for many, many years, and they're called the lost years because people don't interact with turtles much at this period of their time in their life because it's out in the middle of the ocean. And then as soon as they get big enough to be an adolescent, they might settle into a feeding ground in the middle of the ocean that might be thousands of miles away from where they were born. And then when they become the age to reproduce, they head back to that beach and they show up within a couple hundred feet of where they were born to nest and lay eggs again. So they're absolutely navigating around the world, and the mystery is how.
And how do they remember that when they're only about 4 centimeters long and, you know, little squits?
I mean, that's one of the things that a lot of people are looking into. And there's certainly an imprinting process that has to do, we think, with the North Pole and the magnetism of the Earth, and possibly also relating to the moon and the angle of the moon above water and things like that. So those are all important questions that if we could chat with turtles, they'd certainly fill us in on. But we're all just working in the dark a little bit to try to reconstruct how it is that they are able to do that. But it's certainly a talent that I wish I had.
And Eleanor Sterling has many talents, which is why she's director of the Center for Biodiversity and Conservation at the American Museum of Natural History in New York.